Alan Gring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2016. Lecture 12, delivered on September 29, 2016. The title of this lecture is Yields and Effective Rates.
Tonight, Yields and Effective Rates. This is a relatively compact lecture, and it's very applications-based. I'm going to show you how to do things, and they are quite specifically oriented towards your homework and your quiz and your test for the chapter, so that you're not left in the dark about this. This is actually fairly easy math once you get the hang of it, and it's also fairly useful stuff for you. The first thing would be, madam, you borrow, you want to borrow $500 from me. I said, okay, that's fine. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to have you pay me back $600 in 2 years. That's all. Just pay me back $600 in 2 years. And so, nothing complicated about that at all. Okay? But we're going to find out what the interest rate implied on that loan is. We'll also do one. Okay, I've got a, I am going to charge you, sir, 30% on a loan of 3 years. You pay me, borrow $1,000 and pay me back $1,300 in 3 years. Now that's a simpler question. What's your rate on that loan? Well, for 3 years it's 30%, so every year it'd be 10%, right? No. Because of the concept of compounding, the interest rate stated would actually be less than 30%. Here's how you would do it, and then we'll use that as a platform to find out what your interest rate is. But first things first, we're going to take 1 plus 0.30, and we're going to raise that to the 1 over 3 minus 1. 1 over the number of years. That could be 3 years, 80 years, 1 year, a half a year, 1/360th of a year. Whatever it is, whether it's a whole number or a decimal, you put that in the denominator, 1 over that number. And then don't forget, for God's sake, and I've done this myself so many times, forget to subtract the 1 before you write your answer. If you don't, you'll get a 1% kind of interest rate. But now, the thing of it is, oddly enough, these kinds of calculations are much more, scientific calculators are much more receptive to this kind of financial math than financial calculators are. As a matter of fact, financial calculators can get you into some trouble because, I don't know if you've noticed this, financial calculators have historically, every last one of them, has been built without an understanding of hierarchy of math operations. In other words, a business calculator doesn't understand that times come before addition. Doesn't understand that exponents come before multiplications and all that. Financial calculators can be really kind of a little bit dodgy when you're trying to do math on them, actual real math. So just for the purposes of this part of the lecture, you're going to see me kind of pull up a scientific calculator. And probably most of you have one. And if you don't, if you're running Windows, you most definitely do have a nice little scientific calculator on board. Here it is. So what I would do is I would take 1 plus 0.30, close the parentheses, obviously that's 1.3, and I would raise that. Well, there it is, to the 1 over, and I'm going to open up parentheses to do this, 1 over 3, close the parentheses. Yeah, I could have done 3 reciprocal. Sometimes that's not such a great thing to do, but whatever you do, don't round in intermediate steps, especially with exponents, because your rounding error increases, for lack of a better term, exponentially with your rounding. So try to do it in one string of strokes. Now, you'll see me in a couple places. I'll do an exponent, which is a complicated little fraction, and I'll save it in memory sometimes. But anyway, enough of that. Okay, minus 1 equals... So it turns out that 30% for 3 years actually has an annual rate, an APR, of 9.139. And always watch out. Make sure you see how many decimal places they're asking for in those Pearson online questions. But anyway, there it is. That compounds to be exactly 30% over 3 years. Now, we can go on to the problem of the $600 you owe me in 2 years for a $500 loan now. Here's how we're going to do that one. And it's actually a little bit simpler than this one. All I'm going to do is, in parentheses, I'll write this, and I'll also do it in parentheses on my calculator. I'm going to say, all right, $600 divided by $500, and I will raise that to the 1/2 power, 1 over 2. 1 over the number of years. In this case, it's 2 years, and again, don't forget that minus 1, for heaven's sakes. Now, I will pound that one out, clear it, open parenthesis, 600 divided by 500, close the parenthesis. Now, raise that one, and I could to the 0.5 or 2 reciprocal, whatever, however you want to do it, equals minus 1. And this one's got an annual rate of 9.5445%. 9.5445. And as I've mentioned before, something nice about this is that if you make a mistake, you do something wrong, you key in something wrong, or your concept of how to do the problem is wrong, your answer will be wildly off. I mean, it will be in another universe off a lot of times, which kind of gives you an idea. Does this answer, 9.5% or so, make sense? Yeah, that seems like a reasonable rate. I mean, if I got something like 5,000% or 0.0002%, I know I'd done something wrong. But if I get an answer like this, I've got at least some level of assurance that I've gotten it. Now, I might have been off because of some rounding error, though. Now, do a little bit more complicated one, but it's the same concept. Okay, sir, you're going to borrow $400, and in 500 days, you owe me $480 in 500 days. You have to give me back $480. Again, now watch. In this case, borrow $400 and pay back $480 in 500 days. A little caution in here. I kind of got blindsided because there are 365 days in a year, and your textbook in previous editions and the online problems worked with 365 days a year. And I kind of fussed about it. I said, well, technically, we don't use 365 in the denominators. We use 360 in the denominators and 365 in exponents. Well, somewhere along the way, they switched over, and now they're saying use 360, but use them in the exponents, which is not right. But anyway, 480, the end amount over the 400, the beginning amount. Notice how I do the same thing every time. Now to the 1 over 500 over 365, or 360. Like I said, the book is telling you to use 360, so use 360, even though that's not right. Hear that, Pearson? That's not right. Jackasses. It's an exponent. It's a denominator and an exponent, which, of course, confuses it, but... Yeah, leave me alone, okay? Now, in other words, notice that when I have years, the number of years, if it was weeks, I'd use weeks, days, I use days. So, in other words, the number of years here involved is 500 over 360, which is a fraction more than a year. If you do it without thinking about it, you're okay. But if you start thinking about it, you might get confused. But nevertheless, whacking this one down, 480, open parenthesis, 480 over 400, close the parentheses, y to the x. Now, we're going to open parenthesis, 1 divided by, open parenthesis, 500 divided by 360. And this is where if you miss your parentheses, you get sad real fast. Close parentheses, 0.72. Anyway, God, I hope I did that right. Minus 1 equals 14.03% about. So in other words, your effective rate, your APR, your annual rate on this loan, which is how we express all loans, is on an annualized basis, in this case would be 14.03% approximately. And again, you have to watch out for how many decimal places of accuracy they'll want. You got it? So it's always 1 over the number of years. And if you're in days, you... So, let me try this one. You borrow $2,000... for 80 weeks and owe $2,750 at the end. This one will do weeks. So in this one, what we'll have is $2,750 over 2,000 to the 1 over 80 over 52. 80 of 52. I talk weeks, so I break it down weekly. I talk days, I broke it down to days. I talked years, I just used ones in the denominator. Annuals would be ones in the denominator. Days would be 360s in the denominators, or 365s. Weeks would be 52s in the denominators. But basically, all I'm doing is turning this into a decimal number of years. Now, in this one, I'm going to do a little bit of a minus one. Okay, I'm going to do a little bit of a different trick on this one. I'll show you, and it's your call how you want to play it as far as doing calculators. Most of you are pretty comfortable with doing things your own way on the calculators, and I'm not going to mess with that. I'm just going to show you a couple of different tricks. Watch this. Okay, I'm going to clear it out. In this one, what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually do the exponent first and save it in the memory. So in other words, I'm going to do 80 over 52 divided by 52 equals, so that's 1.54 years, and then I'm going to flip it as a reciprocal to 0.65, and then I'm going to save it in the memory. That way, I've got that calculation done. I didn't round anything. I've got it clean, and now I can whack this thing down. Clear. Okay, so I'm going to just simply take 2750 divided by 2000. Close the parenthesis. Y to the X, memory recall. Did I do that right? Huh. That's a 23% interest rate. Man, that's a ripoff loan. Payday loans. But it's in the range of legit. But you see here, what I did was, if it's going to be some really complicated thing to do the exponent, the 1 over some fraction, just do that part first and save it in in one of the memory banks. And then you can just pull it up when you're ready to use it. Okay? Now, this buys you how to get an effective rate for your APR, rather, for any loan possible. Now, let me take you on a journey. A historical journey, and part of this is giving you a background and a different perspective on stories that have taken on sort of a standard way of presenting them and giving you another way of knowing them. But the first thing I have to do is, I am almost afraid to ask this, but I'm going to anyway, just to bother myself. When were you born? What year? How, when? 1995. Yeah? About the same time? 96. Dear God. So you basically don't remember things like the Vietnam War. Well, screw you, okay? No, seriously, you don't remember Clinton? Really? You don't? Slick Willie? You don't remember Ronald Reagan? You don't have any idea what Tin Soldiers and Nixon's Coming is about, do you? God, I don't know why I even bothered to ask. Okay. Take you back to the 1990s. We'd had some turbulence economically. I had told you about what happened in the 70s and the difficulty it took with to clean it up.
and president lost his re-election because he took the hard thing to do and did it. And then we had a reasonably smooth economy. It wasn't spectacular in the 1980s, but we had these budget deficits that were pretty serious, tax cuts and budget deficits. And we came into the 1990s, and we got a new president in 1992. And the 1990s turned out to be the strongest, most, the 1990s turned out to be the period of the longest sustained low unemployment, low inflation, economic growth in the entire history of the United States. It was spectacular. The growth rate of the economy was robust. Unemployment went down to levels that economists said could not be sustained. There had been this assumption that the natural unemployment rate was around 4.3%, and if it was lower than that, well, that would obviously eventually lead to inflation. It was unsustainable. Well, that's not true. The stock market grew robustly. We started running lower and lower budget deficits, and then we started running federal budget surpluses, and we started paying off the national debt, which had been accumulating for a very long time. It was just spectacular what was going on. Well, a player in all of this was the Federal Reserve and its chairman at the time, Alan Greenspan, who was the protege of the man I had talked about before, Paul Volcker. Well, Alan Greenspan, he was, to put it mildly, he was pissed off about this growth. The budget deficits were narrowing. The economy was growing. And if it got to the point, which it finally did, where the federal government was no longer running budget deficits, that would mean that the Treasury was no longer selling debt securities, bonds, notes, and bills. And if the Treasury stopped selling Treasury bills, the Federal Reserve's most powerful tool for controlling the economy, open market operations, would be gone, because open market operations rely on the Fed having a massive supply of government debt instruments of a short-term nature, the T-bills. If the Treasury auctions no longer happened because the government had enough money to pay its bills and even had money to pay off old bills, the old national debt, the Federal Reserve was out of business in controlling the economy. Well, Alan Greenspan didn't want any of that. That's not what he said, but you knew darn well Greenspan was worried. In 1996, he went before Congress and he said, "The stock market's growth is irrational exuberance," which is amazing to call the stock market irrational. That's sort of like calling a tsunami or an earthquake irrational. But anyway, he was absolutely convinced, well, we're going to have inflation. It's all going to go away. It's just going to be a disaster. And I got to stop it right now, this growth. Well, all he had in his portfolio basically was the discount rate to just keep pushing it up and pushing it up and pushing it up. Okay. So he started doing that. Now, eventually, in the early 2000s, after the change of presidents and all of that in 2001, he started claiming that there was a terrible recession. As did the new president, as did several voices, in loud voices in Congress, saying that there was this terrible recession. There was no recession. As a matter of fact, the Federal Reserve only in 2009, 2010, started marking a recession in 2001. There wasn't one. But that was enough for Greenspan to join the choir for massive budget, massive
tax cuts, which would, of course, kill off the source of revenue that was paying the bills. Now, let's take it back to the 1990s. There was this thing happening before your time, it was called the Internet. Now, the geeks like me, we had a thing. It was an Internet for decades. It was called ARPANET. And the military shared it with us. The military part of it was called MILSNET. Military finally got suspicious of the academics and broke MILSNET off from ARPANET. But anyway, there had been this Internet around for a very long time, but hardly no one but academics and total geeks and military people knew about it. But in late 1980s and in early 1990s, some visionaries in Congress convinced Congress to put a huge amount of money into upgrading the telecommunications system of the United States, specifically so that it could handle something called the Internet. Most people weren't using it. My heart had no idea. I mean, it was just something, it was still something out there. Hardly anyone had computers, really. I shouldn't say that. There were people who had computers, but they certainly were not Internet ready. That would come later. But we knew that eventually it would be something awesome, something big. Something that governments couldn't control, boy, were we naive then, that commerce could happen in the blink of an eye, that it was a new frontier of absolute freedom. Okay. But in order for this to happen in the 21st century, the infrastructure would have not, I'm not talking about the wires. Wires, that was a big, big cost, a huge cost. But an infrastructure of code and web pages and standards and conceptual framework for how e-commerce would work, how social media networks would work, that all had to be laid in. No one knew. No one knew how to do this. I mean, we were just feeling in the dark, literally. The ways that we thought it would happen, we had to build and see if that would work and see if people would embrace it. Okay. In order for us to build this network, we had to have companies and entrepreneurs who would, first of all, have computers and us geeks and just massive amounts of time and high-speed connections into this Internet to do it. And it was not going to happen overnight, and people were certainly not going to embrace it overnight, and companies were certainly not going to jump into this and put up e-commerce pages overnight. It would take years for the World Wide Web to be embraced by the business and personal communities of the earth. Hence, we had these startup companies that were going to take a lot of money. They're going to need money, a lot of it. In that era, you bought a computer that was going to be the top of the line. A year later, there was a new Pentium chip. First 386s, then the 486s, and then the Pentium 1s, the Pentium 2s. It was just like every time you thought you had your computer ready for a couple of years, no, you were going to have to change over. You were going to have to hire people to do this coding and all this and write and test and have the patience and the knowledge to do it. It was going to take a long time. So we were going to have to get these companies money. But make sure that the investors knew that they were not going to get a damn dime of return for 5, 7, 10 years. There were creative finance jockeys in California who designed an instrument. Now, these guys came to be vilified as the monsters of the earth. They were prosecuted, sent to prison. Movies were made about how evil they were.
They weren't. They understood that they were going to have to design securities that would not mature for a long, long time. And along the way, there was going to be no money to pay these lenders. So, let's take one. Okay. You, sir, I need you as a sophisticated investor, and you are a sophisticated investor.
You sure?
Okay, you ma'am. Yeah, we're stretching it here, but look. Okay, run with me here for a minute. Okay, we're going to need you. You lend this .com $600, and in 7 years, you'll get $1,000. No interest, in other words, no coupon. This is a zero coupon bond, a ZCB. The ZCBs are otherwise known as deep discount bonds because essentially you, sir, are buying a $1,000 face value debt instrument at a deep discount of $600. Okay? These were the ZCBs, the zero coupon bonds. So in other words, $1,000/$600 to the 1/7th power less one would be your yield on this debt instrument. Whacking that guy out, I can go 1,000 divided by 600. Close the parenthesis, y to the x, 7 reciprocal, minus 1, equals 7.57% on the debt instrument. Which is a fairly high interest rate in that time period. These are speculative. It's risky. No guarantee that any given .com was going to survive. God knows it was just a brutal, bloody war at that time. I think I already told you the story. The big search engines at that time were names like Lycos and Excite. And the losers that were failing and collapsing were these ones like, there was a meta search engine called Dogpile. I think it's still around. And some others, and then there was this real loser called Google. And Google was in so much trouble that the Google's owners tried to sell it to Excite for $1 million, and Excite said, go away. So Google owners came back, okay, $500,000, whatever. Excite said, bite me. It was, well, that was a big mistake, one of those bad decisions. I mean, how could you take it seriously? It was called Google. Sort of like Yahoo. Anyway. Okay. Here's the problem. I'm going to need you to help me out here, sir.
Okay.
Come here. I need you to come. Now, I'm going to need one more volunteer. Would you like to volunteer? No, this could hurt you. This could be dangerous. That's very large of you. Right here, this woman right here. It can't be someone frail. I need someone who's meaty. Meaty. Okay, you, sir. You're muscular. I didn't mean, you know what, okay? Now, come here. I should like you to sit there right here. No, just a little bit towards the center, and I want you to sit right next to him, okay? Okay. This is a debt instrument, this table. Now, in a normal debt instrument,
The coupons pay along the way. 8% coupon bond, you get $80 a year for the life of the bond, and then at the end you get one last $80 check, and then you get your $1,000. So here I am, here on the end. Sort of like the Love Boat.
Exactly like that.
Love, exciting and new. Come aboard, we're expecting you. The Love Boat.
Now, unfortunately, this is a zero coupon bond. So these guys aren't here. I'm alone on this boat. Indeed, this boat is not the Love Boat. It's just a little dinghy in the water, bouncing up and down. You guys can leave now. Now, when they were on here, interest rate changes wouldn't really do. Yeah, you lose some on interest rate increases, gain some on interest rate decreases, but you still got your $80 a year coming in or whatever the coupon is. Now, when Greenspan starts jacking up interest rates, boom, 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 the longest chain of consecutive increases in the discount rate in Federal Reserve history, guess what happens? This, all that stability of those coupons, it's not there. And all you have is the price of the bond down there at the present and the $1,000 here at the end. And interest rates are whipping up and down like this. And you have no stability in the middle. You have a zero coupon bond. I almost hurt somebody I care about. The bonds collapsed. The ZCBs went tap city because they were interest rate sensitive. They had nothing to hold their the bond price. So when interest rates in the economy started to skyrocket, 7.57% becomes the market says, you better start paying 9%, 10%, 12%. We can't. We're stuck with a ZCB. We can't do anything about it. The prices of those things started falling through the floor, and then when the dot-coms came back to need more money to keep their investments going as they learned more about how the internet was going to work, no one was going to lend to them, and the dot-coms all failed. Their stock prices collapsed to nothing. Their debt securities went south. And that was the end of the dot-com revolution. And they sent the people, federal prosecutors, came swooping in like heroes wearing Captain America shields and prosecuted the designers of the ZCBs. And made absolutely sure that there wasn't one juror who had any background in finance, and every judge overseeing a case was a dumbass about finance. And so we have this mythical story of this evil zero coupon bond that really wasn't evil at all. It was the only way we could try to finance. Of course, though, magically, all of that code, all of that knowledge base managed to stay acquired by rather aggressive companies like Google, Microsoft, and their ilk, gathering it up from the bankruptcies. Well, spank me. Isn't that convenient? Anyway, that was the dot-com revolution. And that was what happened with the ZCBs. Remember that these things that hang out there like that, they will be highly interest rate sensitive if there are no payments along the way. The more you rely on long, the more you're going to have to ride volatility. That's just the reality of it. Now I'm going to take you out of that, and I'm going to take you to one last practical thing. And mention one more time how amazing it is to me, because we used to have to do these on paper, or if we had Lotus 1-2-3, we could do them on spreadsheets. But it's a lot more convenient to do now. Going back to just some easy, simple stuff, I want to show you
something practical that's actually utilized by astute consumers.
Get all this off the board. You've got pretty much enough now that you can just walk through the homework quiz and test for this chapter. But there's this one thing that they'll ask you, and I want to make it, they'll ask it to you in more of a simple, in more of a sterile way, and I want to make it a little more practical for you, okay? You borrow $18,000 for a new car. The APR is 6.29% on a 60-month loan. Nothing complicated about this. Let's suppose that you would like to sell this car in exactly 3 years. Will you be right side up? If the value of the car in 3 years is $12,000. Okay? Let me show you why. I'm going to show you how to do it, and this is still to this day. This just amazes me. Okay, here we go. Clear all that out. Clear that. Okay, now. First thing we're going to do is we're going to just get the loan laid out. 6.29%. We're on the financial calculator now. Divided by 12, it's a monthly loan, equals, and I'm going to put that in as the I over Y. Okay, so now the next thing I want to do is 60 months. That's the N, the number of months on the loan, enter. Okay, so now the present value is 18 grand on the loan. Don't forget, present values you put in as negatives, just like future values. It just drives me crazy why they do that. But there it is, present value, enter. Now, we got all the data in, so compute the payment. So your payment is $350.42 a month. Now here's the magic of these newfangled calculators. I just love doing this. Amort. Look at that. The balance, the principal, and the interest payments month by month. So let's go out here to 36 months. The balance on the loan is going to be $78,83.28. So the answer is yes, you are right side up. And now let me make sure you understand. Upside down means the loan value is more than the asset value. Upside down means the loan value is more than the asset value. Right side up means that the asset value is more than the loan value. Here, this thing is right side up at month 36. Now, here's the thing. If you are smart and you are watching the value rate on cars, and you know how this is going to work. You're buying a car that holds its value well, which in this case you are. You're buying something like a Subaru or one of the better one of the an Audi or something like that. What's going to happen here is that at month 36, if you can sell this car for 12 grand, you'll have a little more than $4,000, which means that you can then go back and buy a $22,000 car with a $4,000 down payment, and you'll have the same payments as you did with the $18,000 car. You do this over a period of 9, 12 years, you've worked yourself up four cars, and you're driving something that is almost luxury class by the time you're at 12 years, 15 years. You start with an 18 grand car, 15 years, you're driving a Lexus. You're driving something that's nice. So the idea here is that this is actually a practical thing. But the one thing you have to do is you have to do the research. What cars hold their value? And in this case, well, I've got this car here, apparently is one of those that does hold value. And I will have, if I flip this car in 3 years, I'll have enough money for a down payment, which probably means I'll even get a better interest rate too. Walking in with a $4,000 down payment is going to make your salesman a little nicer to you, maybe. But as time goes on, you can actually upgrade your car every 3 years, and your payments will not get any worse on any of your loans. You follow the idea here? That's why this little amortization table can jump off the pages of a dry finance textbook or a dry finance problem and actually have meaning to you if you plan well in your financial life. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.